You are listening to Radio Albion.
Welcome to another edition of the Orthodox Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, along with my cat, Foxy, who I don't think will be saying very much. He's in his bed right next to me. And today is the 12th of January, 2025. Speaking of pets, my dog was just diagnosed with diabetes, which means twice a day, I have to draw blood from him. I don't know if you've ever had to do this before. It's not something I look forward to. It's this big, big production, which I'm not used to. No one in my family has diabetes, but my pets have more personality than most people. So we'll do whatever we can to increase their quality of life. And thank God I have a vet that I trust completely, who's a huge help and has been for many years now. Unrelated to all that is today's topic. I've dealt with it before, but every once in a while, because it's over the last 5 years, I would say, all of a sudden, it's gotten a lot of mainstream traction. Clearly, it has something to do with the war. And that's the Chernobyl disaster of April 26, 1986. I was in high school, actually a freshman in high school. And of course, this is an era where we didn't have the web. I didn't understand anything about the world at the time. And reconceptualizing historical events is extremely important. Clearly, the Chernobyl myth is being promoted suddenly as an anti-Russian measure. So, most of you know, and if you're roughly my age, you remember the sequence of events. An explosion occurred April 26, 1986, at Reactor Unit 4 of the Chernobyl nuclear power plant complex. That plant fed the Duga the most advanced radar stations in the world, advanced radar stations, so it had a military purpose. And there was sort of an artificial town of people who worked there and made their living there. Now, even in the mainstream understanding of what happened at Chernobyl, there's a lot of mystery. It's a language issue to some extent. And what I'm going to talk about today is in addition to, that's why I call it part two. I don't even remember when I did the first Chernobyl thing, it was years ago. And I'm very careful as to my sources. I don't know if anyone in English has been talking about this like I have. I don't know if there's anything in English available. I actually haven't looked this time around. But there was a very strange test that was being conducted, which is one of the causes of the sequence of events that led to the explosion. It was an experiment on a functional nuclear reactor to study the possibility of using the energy generated by a turbine that continues to rotate by inertia after a shutdown. This actually was an issue at the time, because a hot reactor becomes a major consumer of electricity after being shut down. Now, I'm going to avoid a lot of the technical stuff, because frankly, I'm in no position to comment on it. It's not really necessary. But I also want to point out that most of our information from 86 to today on Chernobyl either comes from Hollywood or journalists. As far as specialists in the matter, especially Russian specialists in the matter, they're all over the place in terms of the cause of this. The reactor shutdown was planned for fuel reloading. So in reactors, this was a cutting edge type, the BMK. Part of the fuel is replaced continuously during reactor operation. So because the rate of such replacement is insufficient, you have to stop it to carry out a large scale replacement. Again, technical aspects of this aren't really necessary, because this is a matter of a historian as much as anyone else. I probably don't have to tell you that the basic story, the extent of the damage, what really happened, and the purpose of what happened is completely whitewashed. It's mostly myth. And again, this is what happens when journalists who don't specialize in anything, whose only purpose is to find an angle to create a human interest, to draw the reader in, that's their purpose, not truth or falsehood, take over the narrative. Now, there's many theories as to what happened. In Russia, there's still the mainstream idea, but there are plenty of top-notch, not just nuclear scientists, but also historians, who realize the problem with the official point of view. I think it largely centers around the fact that this was not a reactor explosion. It was an artificial explosion, a charge placed under the reactor. And there's a lot of reason to believe this. Now, your national Bolshevik types, remember, this is a very different Soviet Union. 1986, the Soviet Union was known as the premier anti-Zionist force. They were clearly losing the technological race. It was no longer profitable, especially for the Jews, to be involved in the USSR anymore. So there was this huge clamor to leave, hence the Jackson-Vanik Amendment years earlier. And the only time sanctions were ever put on the USSR was when there was a problem with Jews immigrating to Israel. You know, the Soviets were in a kind of a bind in that case. But it was sabotage. It was well planned. But the USSR at this point was a superpower in steep decline. No longer Marxist or Leninist whatsoever. In fact, it didn't really have an identity at this point. And certainly stood in the way of American expansion, especially in the Middle East. Objective data is very hard to find. What were the goals here? This was something that was planned. It's such a massive coincidence. We'll get into this in a minute. Of events that people who were there say there's no way this could have not been planned. The Americans say is that, well, the Soviet Union was falling apart. They're Russians, because they don't really know the difference. And of course, we all know that they're backwards. And they didn't really know how to run and that Chernobyl was a very old thing. They just didn't care anymore. Of course, none of that is true. There was a lot going on that, you know, the Soviet Union only had a few years left. I mean, Afghanistan, Korean Flight 007, Perestroika, sharp decline in oil prices, many other things. There was a ripple effect. In this case, that led to, among other things, the Soviet Union's demise. But it was also a provocation to discredit nuclear energy. And they almost did die out. Both Germany and France lost their industries because of this. So the decline in nuclear energy that followed the loss of Chernobyl just was one more push, pushing the USSR over the cliff. And it is true, the sudden collapse of the USSR was a massive disaster, because we know what happened in 1990. But it also was a major blow to France and Germany. Our situation with Russian oil sanctions, or sanctions on Russian oil to Germany, that wouldn't be the case if their nuclear plants were up and running. France was, I think, almost entirely nuclear at one point. The French nuclear industry is largely gone, and most of the world abandoned any long-term plans to develop a nuclear program. Anyway, it was the third shift, actually. After midnight on 26, fourth reactor, powerful explosion. Panic was multiplied many times, and the USSR didn't help matters by the censorship. The censorship, partially because they didn't know what had happened themselves, and that meant that the Western press was able to go wild. And I vaguely remember the headlines, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Chernobyl, death from Chernobyl, all of these, you know, maudlin headlines. I think it was the Daily Mail said, in Chernobyl, the bodies of thousands of people are buried in ditches. Even today, it paralyzes public opinion. Of course, there was no such thing. The fallout, no pun intended, from this was actually fairly minor. There was no large chunks of land that were contaminated or pulled out of agricultural production. Thousands of people did not die as a result of this. The doses of radiation, remember where Chernobyl was, by the way, in the 18th century, was almost an entirely Hasidic town. And the Shabbat organization called this the Chernobyl miracle, which adds an extra layer of suspicion. It's on the border of, essentially on the border of Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus. What they were exposed to had no effect on health. People did not become more likely to suffer from leukemia, and there was no increase in the number of children born with genetic abnormalities. And I believe it was the 2014 UN Scientific Committee on the Effects of Nuclear Radiation, that's UNSCEAR, which will be mentioned again, 142 major scholars in this area from 21 countries came to that very same conclusion. Not that that had any effect on how this is treated by journalists. Since there's this widespread ignorance, almost fear of nuclear energy, it was very easy to manipulate public opinion on this. But deaths directly from this explosion amount to 134 people. The plant workers, members of rescue teams, you had a lot of ionizing radiation. That was real. But you have roughly 380,000 people involved in the cleanup. And they were exposed to radiation slightly exceeding maybe 100 MSV. A dose of 1,000 MSV, that's where you get to the danger level. So just a couple of days later, they're at the site and were not affected. They were all examined very closely at the time, and there was no question as to their health. And one of the people doing that was Zbigniew Jaworski from the Central Laboratory of Radiological Protection. And he was actually on the UNSCEAR board since 1973. And he's one of the authors of the report coming directly out of that. And he says 14 years, this is when he wrote this, 14 years after the Chernobyl accident, there's no scientific evidence that cancer rates have increased, mortality has increased, or other diseases have appeared that could be related to radiation. They tried to talk about this spike in leukemia, but they stopped talking about it very quickly. It didn't matter. Nuclear power was still attacked. Russian incompetence was still attacked. It also helped the Ukrainian nationalist movement, so to speak, that the U.S. was helping. Now, there was a growth of cancers, but it's not connected to Chernobyl. In the mid-90s, there was a conference of oncologists in Belarus. Or the mid-90s, this was discovered. Actually, it was in 1984, 2 years prior. It surfaced in the mid-90s. And in that conference in 84, there was a rapid growth in cancer, especially in rural areas. It actually began in Belarus in the late 70s. Therefore, the increases in cancer, which were real, were not connected to Chernobyl. So there was no connection there. The Soviet health ministry didn't really talk about that. In fact, some of the authors I'll mention here in a minute, and one in particular who discovered that, the existence of that conference, most of these guys, well, at least most of the Soviets and Ukrainians were demanding an end to nuclear energy. However, there was a massive increase in psychosomatic illness, mental illness, respiratory disease. That's not caused by radiation, but by fear. The media was saturating of what's going to happen to them, especially if they live there. They live on contaminated land. They're about to get cancer. Scientists at the time, there's one, Leonid Ilyin from the Institute of Biophysics and the Russian Ministry of Health at the time, said that actual scientists have never published this nonsense that appears in the media. He was part of the cleanup crew, and he represented the UN agency in Russia. And he said the media exaggerates the scale of the tragedy, spreading the opinions of various so-called experts. The worst consequences are psychological in nature. They were caused by fear and eviction from territories that were recognized, often very hastily, as dangerous. And of course, it turns out they weren't dangerous at all. It's very interesting that very area, the chief crop at the time was potatoes. Well, the next crop, let's say harvesting, would be that fall. Potatoes were banned from export. The claim was that they were tainted. And in fact, that wasn't true. There were several analyses on the agricultural products right there, you know, almost in sight of the nuclear reactor, and there was nothing wrong with them. It didn't matter, though. The ban was still placed on them, ruining an entire region. But in March of 96, some skepticism comes from a source that I didn't expect. I don't think I mentioned this the last time. The Economist of London. Their article was called Chernobyl, Cancer, and Creeping Paranoia. They actually admit that direct effects of radiation coming from this were insignificant, even if you lived right there. And they say, far worse are the effects of fear and ignorance. People did not know and still do not know what the real dangers, the real threats are. This is the biggest problem for health right now. And the tragedy wasn't so much radiation. That wasn't the case. The Finns, for example, registered no spike in radiation coming over their border. This was supposed to be worldwide, if you recall. One of the reasons I think the Hasidics, Shabbat, and all these other groups were cheering this, and we're looking at the depopulation of Ukraine today. Thousands of pregnant Ukrainian and Belarusian women decided, or were persuaded, to have abortions. 86, 87, there was a big spike in abortions. Almost a third of all children born in Eastern Europe. The number of miscarriages increased by 25%, not from any health risk, but because these women were terrified of giving birth to these mutants. I remember seeing the pictures of two-headed dogs. That was in mainstream presses. Herwig Peritsky, in Ukraine, he says there's been no increase in the birth of children with severe defects. In fact, UNSCEAR actually makes the claim that even in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, who were exposed to these populations that survived, you didn't have a spike in genetic abnormalities. There was a strange spike in thyroid cancer in children in that part of the world. To the extent that it can be that is caused by radiation, it develops in a latent form for almost a decade. But you had this increase in thyroid cancer less than a year after the disaster. So they were unable to draw a relationship between doses of radiation, what the children were exposed to, and the cases of thyroid cancer. There are other reasons for the increase. They don't, you know, and they don't show itself. This particular cancer in children doesn't show itself until much later. The polls were very much a part of this, you know, media frenzy. And it was the Polish press that first noticed that the exclusion zone is a half a square kilometer. But if you look right now, you do a Google image search and you'll see these maps of the extent of radiation. It looks like these red circles radiating out literally from Chernobyl all over the entire world. You had a large-scale resettlement from the city of Pripyat within 11 days, so early May 1986. It affected about 116,000 people. But when local government party, actually at the time, made the decision to evict, they didn't listen to actual Russian scientists who say there's no danger here. And actually, that was mentioned by Mikhail Waligorsky, who is the Department of Physical Medicine and the Oncology Center in Krakow. He says the resettlers, those that were resettled, did not die from lethal doses of radiation, but from severe stress. Similar reactions to stress were observed in Poland during the flood of 1997. The city of Pripyat, most of the closed 30-kilometer zone, is people live there, and they have lived there. The radiation level in the area is safe. Any Pole receives an average dose of the of MSV of 3.3. What's the danger? 1,000. But early on, the Polish press agency, here was their claim. The number of fatalities in Ukraine caused by the nuclear explosion has exceeded 4,000. 3.5 million people are sick due to exposure to radiation, and today there is no data on the number of deaths. The number varies from 15,000 to 30,000. Where they got this information, of course, is another matter. The American press, very early, said that 80 people died immediately from the explosion, and 2,000 were injured. They were allegedly buried not in the cemetery, but in Pirogova. That was where the radioactive waste warehouse is located. That's not true, but I think it just gave a greater gravity to the situation. The New York Post, who, you know, the best of times can't be taken seriously, had a headline actually, mass grave in Kiev, bodies of 15,000 people are being pushed into ditches by bulldozers. If you recall, the early years, or the early days, early months of COVID, they were saying the same kind of thing. I remember my favorite, I think it was Bolivia, where it said that the capital city is running out of caskets. Actually, they said this in a few places. They're running out of coffins, they said. And I read this article, and I think I commented on it on here. And at the end, it said, yes, there's been 250 deaths, allegedly from COVID. 250. But of course, the headline, that they're running out of cancer, it's the same mentality. But because the Soviets prevented, or often just simply didn't know enough, this gave the press the opening it needed. There was a Norwegian magazine, Aftenposten, in 1990, there was an article called Chernobyl, an Eternal Nightmare. 5 years after that, in 95, actually it was October 13th, 1995, Reuters reported that 800,000 children had suffered cancer or a sudden death as a result of the Chernobyl accident. There was a French broadcast, a documentary, docudrama, it's called Chernobyl, Autopsy of a Cloud. I think that's, I'm reading this in Russian, so I think that's what it says. The French scientific establishment, though, protested against this. You had an army of people representing scientific societies, biophysics, nuclear medicine, signed a letter challenging the media outlet and calling them propagandists. The British film, Igor, The Child of Chernobyl, same thing. It was British, but it was shown in Poland. And it shows a kid with deformed limbs and claims that this is from the Chernobyl accident. It's very, very maudlin. And according to the film itself, or the docudrama, that this is normal. These anomalies develop in the millions in contaminated areas in Belarus and Ukraine. It's a lie, of course. The Polish scientific establishment has also challenged the British in that regard. Now, one element of all of this that doesn't get talked about, well, it may have, but not very often, and often not in English, is the financial aspect. Internationally, something like 600,000 people officially recognized as victims of the accident were well compensated. The exact amount is hard to find. Whether or not they were sick because they lived in a certain area. And of course, none of these payments could be canceled. Belarus is in this is for life. So you're talking about $16 billion over a certain period of time. all the way up until the present day. The U.S. and Western Europe donated early on about $800 million for the for safety measures. EBRD wanted to spend 3 billion euros. And then the Kievan government said $5 billion will be needed over the next 20 years to cope with the consequences of this accident. And they keep saying things like that. Even in Ukraine, the intensity of demands by Ukrainian politicians, even now, demanding financial assistance for the Chernobyl accident, you know, it has more to do with their own budget than anything else. Therefore, to this day, Chernobyl is painted in the darkest colors. In 1995, the Ukrainian Ministry of Health issued a press release saying that 125,000 died in the Chernobyl disaster over a nine-year period. The World Health Organization, of all people, of all institutions, reacted very negatively. Dr. Valery Pichikov, who dealt with a lot of the cleanup there, Pichikov is a journalist, and he's one of the people who promoted this, one of the people who were got attacked by the World Health Organization, and he was one of the people who promoted the idea that cancer, various diseases of the blood, respiratory tract, digestive, nervous systems, throwing these all together, and even someone from the Belarusian Republican Institute of Radiation Medicine, Vladislav Ostapenko, told Reuters that his country faces a demographic catastrophe because of Chernobyl, and for no other reason. Huge birth defects. And he says every year, 2,500 children are born with genetic defect. Well, he doesn't mention that all countries in the former USSR are experiencing a demographic decline. Whether, you know, it didn't matter. In some places, they still are. And if we take into consideration the number of citizens of Belarus, the number of severe genetic defects in newborns should be at least five times higher. But that has nothing to do with radiation. That's just normal. In these populations, the defects are about 6%. So all he did, all these types, whether medical or just journalists, is attach Chernobyl to whatever problems that they had. And not only do they get global sympathy, but they get payments, both domestically and from abroad. Back when the Greens and the Social Democrats controlled the German parliament, that's when nuclear power was eliminated in Germany. There was no radiation phobia in France before, but the environmentalists there, who were now emboldened by this, forced the exact same decision. Of course, oil and gas were, you know, they were quite happy about all of this. But these are the same people who tried to pretend that Three Mile Island here in Pennsylvania in 1979 was also a disaster. You didn't have any radiation. Nothing entered the atmosphere. No one was harmed. Workers received a slightly higher dose of radiation, but it didn't pose a danger to anybody. And it had nothing to do with radioactive fuel, but it was the nature of the safety system which worked in this case. Now, one of the reasons, both then and now, for the very maudlin, agonizing, lurid images and fake statistics and all of this, is to embolden Kiev. Just a few years after this, they're independent from the Soviet Union and Russia. Russia and Ukraine collapse into nothing in the 1990s. Ukraine, remaining under the thumb of the Jews and Jewish oligarchs, did not recover, unlike the Russians. There's a book called The Riddle of the Chernobyl Disaster. The author is Nikolai Kravchuk, Department of Atomic Nucleus Theory and Physics Faculty of Moscow State University, Lomonosov, published in 2011. But Kravchuk did his dissertation on this too. Before this was even published, he was removed from his position at the Institute of Theoretical Physics of the National Academy of Sciences in Ukraine. His findings were supported in a review of the book by Professor Ivan Kravets, the doctor, and also Vladimir Vyshinsky, doctor of physical and mathematical sciences. But it didn't reach the general Ukrainian public. His argument is that the way things look to him, and he's a specialist in these areas, the reactor explosion was planned in advance. And he says, carried out under the leadership of Gorbachev's Central Committee, the Communist Party. Conveniently, the blame was placed on plant personnel. The official version of these events were presented at the IAEA, the Atomic Energy Association, and the main conclusion there, the root cause of the accident is a very unlikely combination of violations of the order and operating mode committed by the personnel of the power unit. That quote comes from Kravchuk's book. The problem is, because it's a unlikely combination, the plant personnel, you can't just blow this up on your own. It has to be pre-planned and it has to be artificial. But at the time, there was no interest in objective investigation. They even manipulated the operational logs of the plant itself. And even the official version, therefore, it's hard to trust anybody, dissident or otherwise. Now, he says from April 1st to the 23rd of 1986, he says the state of the reactor core changed. Such changes, of course, over time, they don't occur by chance, but as a result of well-planned actions. The fourth power unit contained the maximum amount of radioactive materials, 1,500 MCI. At the time when these tests, these low-power tests, were carried out, the reactor already was in an extremely unstable state. Some reactor cells contained highly enriched fuel from nuclear submarines, plutonium-239 in this case. I've never seen an explanation as to why fuel from nuclear submarines was placed and used in Chernobyl, but nowhere else. And that meant you had a sharp increase in power and temperature in the active zone. But very quickly, the supply of graphite rods, which were meant to calm all of this, quickly was exhausted. You had specialists like Chernyshev, Anatoly Chernyshev. He was not allowed to work that day. And those who were at the station at the time asked to convince the head of the test, a guy named Anatoly Dyatlov, to immediately stop the test, stop the reactor. And of course, Dyatlov was told something different. In fact, there was a phone call to Dyatlov saying, do not stop these tests. They knew what was happening. There was also a deliberate disabling of the reactor emergency protection devices. The experiment was carried out at the turbo generator in which the bearing was broken, and not with the serviceable one. You have research plans for this. Doing this kind of test on a functional nuclear reactor is simply not done. And certainly it's not done on the third shift with people like Dyatlov, who were not qualified to do any of this. You have things like vibration tests conducted simultaneously with turbine idling. So now you have test upon test. Steam explosion, which occurred due to the malfunction of a technical system, was actually the bearings, couldn't withstand the overload during these tests. So after the hydrogen explosion, the nuclear fuel from two or more polyshells compacted to the walls. In excess of the reactor, local critical mass was reached, leading to what he calls a quasi-nuclear explosion. You've got to remember, these nuclear plants, because it was a military, I think nuclear power plants all over Russia and the old Soviet Union, it's designed to function in wartime. Remember how upset the regime was getting over, you know, Zaporizhzhia and all these other plants, which, by the way, Russia built, and for the most part staffed up until recently. Ukraine has not built a single major power plant, nuclear or otherwise. These are meant to withstand a full artillery attack. They're built to withstand a attack from the air. The upper lid of this of the cooling thing is like 2,000 tons. The plasma cloud of 40,000 degrees was formed inside. Now, the presence of this highly enriched uranium-238, no one has given an explanation for. This is some of the things that have been manipulated in the logs. There was a local earthquake because of it. This massive force, a huge scale, but it was registered seismically. But despite all of it, Clearly, it was a nuclear explosion. Nuclear power plants don't explode in that way. They're not weapons. But in this case, it had to have been an artificial device. Let me quote him here. If there had been an immediate understanding of the essence of what happened, then it would have been clear what to do. No backfilling, except perhaps throwing in bags of boric acid. It was then, from April 27th, that the radiation contamination of the surrounding area increased sharply, by tens of times, so that what happened on the evening of April 26th was inevitable, and no boric acid would have helped at that moment. And if this had been clear right away, then it would have become obvious that the most urgent task was to focus on the immediate evacuation of the population from the 50-kilometer zone. Of course, that wasn't done either. Anatoly Dyatlov, the man who gave these orders, but himself was taking orders. He was told to, quote, finish off Chernobyl. This was no accident. Kravchuk says he also had a guarantee. He was told if he didn't continue and then repeat these tests are not repeated, to repeat them, to keep doing it until the whole thing fell apart. You will be punished if you don't repeat it, and you'll be rewarded otherwise. There's an interview with the former director of the plant who agrees with all of it. He agrees with the sabotage thesis. But of course, everyone on that part of the world believes that whatever you might think of the Soviet Union, either then or in the 70s and 80s, it doesn't matter. It was used as a means to discredit the Soviet Union and to punish them for not letting Jews to emigrate, even though that was in the process of being solved at the time. 2006, on the 20th anniversary of the accident, the World Health Organization released a report called Chernobyl, the True Scale of the Accident. The document stated the total number of victims of the tragedy was estimated at 4,000 people, a number that includes both those who have already died as a result of the consequences of it and those that might die in the future. In 2005, the WHO indicated that only 50 deaths, 50, were directly related to Chernobyl. That included mainly emergency workers who legitimately died from acute radiation sickness. They include 9 children who died from thyroid cancer among the victims. But then they have a number of 3,940 who might die from various forms of cancer. Now, no one knows how the might die thing was calculated, but I have, when I publish this, I have all of the all my bibliography and all the links. Somebody, his name is Leonid Bolshev. He's a director of the Institute for Problems of Safe Development of Nuclear Energy and a corresponding member of the Russian Academy of Sciences. And he's talking about the medical fallout here. He says, the diagnosis of acute radiation sickness was made to 134 people. Of these, 28 died in the first 4 months and the rest were cured. Among the population, not a single case of acute radiation sickness was recorded. Total medical examinations in contaminated areas revealed an increase of the incidence of thyroid cancer, up from 40% of 748 cases of those who were children at the time of the accident. There was some increase in the incidence of leukemia amongst those who were involved in the cleanup. It's a rare disease, and it's easy to detect above the general background of morbidity. Doctors also associate a certain number of thyroid cancers, maybe 20 out of 115, amongst those who were involved in the cleanup. But even that, they can't connect with radiation. This didn't make any contribution to the overall mortality. The mortality rate of the Chernobyl accident cleanup, or the liquidators as they call it, is the same level as that of the general adult population. With the exception of thyroid cancer in children, which we've already discussed in this so far, but by the way, the vast majority of them were cured, the health of the population was not affected by radiation. But that is not what the press was telling you, and certainly that's not what Ukrainian politicians wanted to hear. Back in 1991, I mentioned a figure of a few hundred thousand. That went up to 8 million people, including 2 million people in Russia, as victims. But even closer, 70,000 square kilometers close by, they had no one classified as victim, not a single person. It's the same guy here. He says this: the country was at a turning point. new politicians and parties were emerging, protecting Chernobyl victims is a noble cause, and on a primitive level, our people suffered, it was the communists who polluted everything, it's clear that all the evil is in them, and the communists, they hid it, they didn't tell us anything, but now we know, and now we'll protect people, and when we protect them, we'll figure it out ourselves, without experts from the old life. That is, the second side is illiteracy. You can't explain anything to an illiterate person. This is not only about the politicians who were involved in decision-making, many of them were sincerely convinced that their cause was right. So a government commission in Ukraine was created. You had the Politburo of the Central Committee, the Republican government in Belarus, Ukraine, professional organizations. And these are the people who put together these big sarcophagus over the fourth block, which I think I've seen a few pictures of this. And but the money continued to roll in internationally and domestically. And you have now millions of people, it's like Holocaust reparations, who have these pensions, whether or not they actually affected anything in hospital, just like COVID. If there was people coming in, if a doctor would claim or the hospital would claim that this is because of radiation, they got a subsidy. That means they had an incentive to claim that this was from Chernobyl. So this was a financial issue as well as an ideological one. You didn't have a mass evacuation. You also didn't have any real impact from people living close by. There's people who live there. There's people who live close by. You just, again, a Google image search, you'll see guys taking pictures. This is supposed to be, you know, permanently poisoned. And this goes back decades now. Now, some of the authors I'm citing, other than the ones I've mentioned explicitly, are people who actually are competent in this particular area. Grigory Medvedev, Novoletsky, Nikolai Karpan, Boris Gorbachev, Tarapan, Fedulenko, Vladimir Dmitriev, and of course Kravchuk, who I've already mentioned. These are the people who are challenging the official version, every one of them, every one of whom is someone competent in nuclear physics or something thereabouts. Chernobyl costs about between $300 and $360 billion for the cleanup between 1986 and 2000. And, of course, the estimated damage, which is very much in dispute, $500 billion. But again, you had a retired FSB, Major General Anatoly Kakchuk, stated it wasn't that long ago, in the first period after the accident, the analysis of sabotage was seriously considered. And in fact, the military and intelligence apparatus was put on high alert because when this happened, because the thing blew up, which is very hard to do. And again, these things don't blow up. It's not a nuclear bomb. It would be a normal explosion. But this extremely heavy design that's meant to withstand an assault, you know, it had to have been artificial. The way I understood it, even when I was in college, it was that you had an explosion that, because it occurred in a nuclear plant, spewed radiation everywhere. In fact, worldwide. In fact, the truth is, there was a bomb planted. That's the only thing that makes any sense here. There's a few of these writers that I quoted. We could summarize them. We know that this was a conspiracy, straight from the party, straight from the West, straight from numerous sources, a sabotage operation. But it had to be carried out in a way that none of the participants understood what they were doing, and to leave really no traces. And we could summarize it using a number of steps. So the first thing that they had to do, you have to find a pretext for the reactor to be taken out of normal operation. Normal operating conditions, it's impossible to blow up a reactor. There are so many automatic systems duplicating and overlapping each other. And it's not up to the operator. This happens automatically. You have to, by hand, dismantle them. And it takes a long time to do, so it's not an accident. there was an accident at the Leningrad nuclear power plant in 1975, had an almost identical scenario. Because of that, Chernobyl was built specifically with that event in mind. The scale of the accident wasn't a big deal, but the pretext was in conducting this stupid experiment, essentially to simulate cooling the reactor during an accident in blackout conditions. Again, normally this isn't done. But people like Dyatlov, the HBO series, they'll tell you how important this was, and this was done all the time. You had plenty of stations with these reactors, not just in Chernobyl. You had the Leningrad, Smolensk, Kursk, many other places. You had 12 units operating, and they all worked successfully, but this test was really never done. For some reason, only Chernobyl did it. The second step, find a reason to block at least some of the emergency protections. And this alleged need to repeat the experiment, which again, even if you were to do this elsewhere, you would never repeat it. According to the first report, IAEA, the reactor had all the necessary protections to save the reactor. Nothing malfunctioned. The design of the reactor provided protection against this sort of accident, taking into account the physical characteristics and everything else. To repeat this experiment, which didn't have to be done in the first place, is really step two. Medvedev, I mentioned already, who knew it well, he was part of the construction, and in fact, the deputy chief engineer of the station. Here's what the personnel there was told to turn off. They blocked the reactor protections based on the device shutdown signal when two turbines were disconnected. They blocked the protections based on the water level and steam pressure in the separator drums, trying to conduct the test despite unstable operation of the reactor. The protection based on thermal parameters, disconnected. They disconnected the systems for protection against the maximum design accident, trying to avoid a false activation of the emergency response system during the test, thereby losing the opportunity to reduce the scale of any probable accident. Turns out Dyatlov had no right to be there. In fact, most of the staff that were there that night had no right to be there. Step three, you had to force the personnel to conduct this experiment on a functional reactor. Yeah, you had these tests done before, and they all failed because you can't do it on a functional reactor. But there certainly was no accidents, no incidents. In other words, they turned off both turbines while the reactor was running. It's insanity. You know, Homer Simpson wouldn't do something like that. Step four, after the event, you have to create an opinion in professional circles that the accident allegedly occurred not as a result of errors or criminal actions, but of the design and its unreliability. And who supports this? The deputy chief engineer Dyatlov himself, who was in charge of the entire thing. He then claims later that the experiment had nothing to do with the accident, and it was competent, it was very important, we discussed it several times, and it's not true. How the personnel didn't know the disaster that was awaiting them. I mean, they teach it anywhere in nuclear science. Step five, completely weaken the administrative and technical control of the supposed object of sabotage. In other words, Chernobyl was transferred from the professional ministry of the USSR, the Ministry of Media Machine Building, to the Ministry of Energy, thus freeing it from the guardianship of actual professionals. The Ministry of Energy was not competent in this area. According to people like Medvedev, the central apparatus of the energy ministry didn't have sufficient experience in the nuclear world. Step six, weaken the management personnel. Having people who wouldn't interfere with these orders. These were all violations. You had people like Fomin, who was an electrician, who was nominated to the Chernobyl plant from the Zaporozhye State District Power Plant, which was thermal. And before that, he worked in the Poltava power grid. Fomin is one of these people who had no right to be there. Vladimir Bronikov, who was an experienced reactor operator, they wanted him instead, but no, the party kept pushing Fomin. He's nasty. He's difficult. Finally, Moscow gave in. In fact, most of the candidates for these positions weren't nuclear engineers. They're Fomin or Dyatlov shouldn't have worked in Chernobyl at all. Fomin himself, when he was tried, he said, "Why didn't I ensure the safety of the plant? I'm an electrician. I've been doing this for 17 years. I agreed to take this position of chief engineer. I took a few short-term courses and then studied on the job." But he couldn't do it because of a lack of time. It's impossible that people didn't know that when he was being hired. And he really didn't want the position very much. The Chernobyl plant was the only nuclear power plant where neither the director nor the chief engineer were nuclear specialists whatsoever. And that management selected employees. This is how it was destroyed. This is quiet sabotage, as they call it. The management there could be told to carry out these experiments because they didn't understand the risks, and they didn't ask any unnecessary questions. Dyatlov was not competent in this. None of them really were. And by the way, Dyatlov had been fired from a previous job because of an accident. Dyatlov had been a head of a physics laboratory in the Far East. He worked on a small ship, a nuclear installation, never at a plant. He doesn't know the thermal schemes, uranium graphite reactors. He didn't understand it, and in reply to competent questioning, he got very defensive. They called him clumsy, slow-witted, difficult, and confrontational with people. And this is Grigory Medvedev, who is very, very competent. They pushed for this guy. None of these people had any competence. Step 7, set a task before these unprofessional people, a task that they couldn't perform properly, and it should be very difficult. I said in the beginning that they were doing tests upon tests. Even competent people would have a tough time with these. The company that was engaging in this testing program, Donetsk Energo, it's not a nuclear company. They're not competent in this area either. Their engineer, G.P. Malekka, who didn't have the necessary knowledge and experience in operating nuclear reactors. So you had people like Bukhanov, Fomin, Dyatlov, Kovalenko. They didn't know the regulations well enough. So when they were told to do these tests that occurred in no other place, manually turning off all the safety, God knows what they were being told, it's impossible that this wasn't planned. Step 9, conduct an experiment without coordinating it, understanding that they would not be able to coordinate the program. So many people there started, they were lobbying for this experiment. They were lobbying for these people for a very long time. Step 10, remove and fire anyone who could prevent the experiment from being conducted. So the deputy chief engineer for science, Nikolai Karpan, who had been doing these kind of tests since 1982, was replaced very quickly by Dyatlov. The test is not quite like this, but they were done in different circumstances. At Chernobyl were allegedly successful, but no one's seen the test results here. But they had to get rid of people who mattered. Anatoly Chernyshev, he was supposed to be there on April 25th, but the shutdown of the unit was postponed to the next day, and Chernyshev, who called into work the afternoon of the 25th, was told that all the tests were finished and he was free to go. Of course, that was a lie. They deliberately kept him away. Step 11. Again, hand this over to the third shift, the most inexperienced, who didn't know enough to say no. Yuri Trigub, who was actually competent, handed over his shift to Alexander Akimov at midnight, April 25th, 1996. Again, he's one of these people who had no right to be there. One of them there was 26 years old. He'd only been there 8 months. His name was Aleph Taptunov, brought in by Fomin. Now, Yuri Trigub didn't like this idea. He had heard of it. And, of course, he observed it, but it was not working. So step 12, put them in the most difficult conditions. Don't familiarize them with anything. Have a couple courses, as I mentioned, combining experiments, and then putting pressure on the test manager. It almost guarantees an unfavorable outcome. They're put in extreme situations. It was done in a hurry, on the most inexperienced shift. None of the people who were engaged in this had any familiarity with this program. Trigob himself said, I didn't like this. It was so vague. It was put together by an electrician. What am I supposed to say? Legasov's report to the IAEA says, the main motive here was to complete the test as quickly as possible. Violations were all over the place, and they were being told to do this, but they were ignorant enough that they would go along with it. They simply didn't have, according to him, they had insufficient understanding of the peculiarities and technological processes in the nuclear reactor, and they had lost any sense of danger, or they never had it in the first place. And then again, the primary cause of the accident was an extremely unlikely combination of violations of the procedure and operating mode committed by the power unit personnel. So, according to Vladimir Komarov, who was at the Russian Academy of Natural Sciences, he was deputy director for science at the Smolensk nuclear power plant. Later on, he granted an interview, and he said, at the critical moment of the reactor's power failing, almost falling to zero, when it had to be shut down, an official from the Sector for Supervision of Nuclear Power Plants under the Central Committee of the CPSU called that unit and ordered Dyatlov to continue the tests. Carry out the inspection. Either you retire or become the chief engineer of the new Chernobyl NPP2. There was definitely a phone call made in the middle of this to continue it. At trial, there were many recordings of telephone conversations that were played. There's no doubt about it at this point. Step 13. Another important difference here, this experiment was that there were mismatched pumps connect to a feed water pump, increasing the risks of deterioration, the reactor cooling. They didn't know enough to connect these. They were not proportional. Connected an additional number of pumps to the run-out turbine, which they didn't fully understand. And a competent person, even if they were to do a test like this, would never do it like that. Again, the technical part of it is beyond me, and I don't care. But, you know, they didn't understand it. So you had an overload of power going in, and then not enough to absorb. Step 14, make sure you have a dangerously low number of graphite rods in the active zone. That's how a reactor is controlled and dampened. So the more graphite rods you have, the more controllable the reactor. When it falls below the permissible limit, the reactor can start running away from it, leading to an accident. At least the operational logs record only two rods an option. That is catastrophic. It's a gross violation of the technological regulations. When it's decreased to 15 rods, the reactor has to be immediately shut down. It had two before the explosion. That was from Vladimir Fedylenko of the Kharachev Institute of Atomic Energy. Step 15, their actions led to an explosion, and these actions were duplicated despite the need to shut down the reactor during the execution of the program. They received a call, as I mentioned already, from the Central Committee. This incomprehensible criminal conduct of the experiment, the most inexperienced shift, haste, pressure on personnel, the need to shut down the reactor after operation at half capacity because of the low number of rods. The PRISM, it was called, the software program that could do this. They didn't know, and they didn't understand, and they didn't even know if it was working correctly or not. They conducted an experiment on a working reactor and created all the conditions for a reactor explosion. They connected more pumps to the slowing down turbine rather than two, which increased the risk of deterioration of the reactor supply. All you have to do is remove the bulk of the rods, and then the deed is done. They sharply reduced the feed water supply to zero. They combined that experiment with vibration tests and a few others, all done at the same time. They turned on all the main circulation pumps. That was a massive increase in the rundown load. There were many errors like that beyond the scope of my competence or beyond the scope of this talk. Let me quote Vladimir Smirnov, who is competent in this area. I'm going to quote him. I know I've gone over a bit, but let me summarize this and clarify. Let's now consider our sabotage thesis. We would deliberately like to cause an accident in a nuclear power plant and plan to coincide it with the beginning of perestroika. How to do this? This requires powerful engineering and scientific support from nuclear specialists. Such a group of nuclear specialists should be somewhere at a closed Western research center in the USA or Europe, and almost certainly under the auspices of the Secret Services. Our job was to provide this group with fresh information and implement, one way or another, the recommendations. I have no doubt that such interaction was established. As we receive research results from the USSR in our own work, the conditions for carrying out the action gradually became clear. The results of the accident at the Leningrad NPP turned out to be very valuable, but it took a certain amount of effort to put the whole thing on the back burner. The slowdown experiment was a very convenient tool in this sense, allowing us to obtain the necessary indicators. All control data were obtained during the rundown experiment in 1985. In the early 1980s, there was a sector for the supervision of nuclear plants, was created directly by the Central Committee of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, having nothing to do with safety, but strictly almost a political management. Those guys reported to the secretary of the Central Committee. Officials began to actively interfere in the management of nuclear power plants, which led to the disaster. That, as absurd as all of this is, these key incompetent personnel were approved by the same department of the Central Committee. All the threads in here, this chain, all the threads go to the Central Committee, according to people like Vladimir Komarov. I told you about the phone call. There were others, not just interfering with the operation normally of the plant, but in the middle of that test. They specifically called the unit with a request to keep the reactor at half capacity, and the second time, by forcing Yatlov to conduct the experiment. There is no question that this is a complex conspiracy to humiliate Russia, to humiliate the USSR, and to destroy nuclear power. There's no question that there's a connection between Ukrainian independence and Chernobyl, because the Western thesis is that the Soviets or the Russians were so incompetent they couldn't deal with this. This was an old, we're so far ahead of them technologically. This is an old third world reactor. It was a lie. In preparation of this conspiracy, you had people in the Ministry of Media Machine Building, the State Nuclear Supervision Authority, and certainly people like Kuczynski, who was a part of this CPSU, Central Committee, sudden interest in nuclear power. New chief engineer, Stenberg, was appointed to the station. He was one of the people who blamed the operational personnel and the equipment, the commission, the Stenberg Commission, didn't mention any of this stuff. But the Ministry of Media Machine Building knew exactly what was going on, and so did he. Ultimately, it failed, because what they wanted was a nuclear explosion, but they got a much less spectacular event. The explosions which began the destruction of the reactor kind of saved it. But clearly it was planned. And the plans associated with it must have been very serious. I mean, it was meant to be a boogeyman. And it was from the very first days. They're talking about it all the time. We know what the purpose was. We know what was going on. We know what the power centers were. And clearly, the West was deeply involved in this. Which is a whole separate issue. And this is now mainstream in Russia. But just don't tell anyone at HBO, because apparently they don't know. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.